Well then, you've got the Bryant Park Project on your iPod or your computer or your something. I'm Luke Burbank, today coming to you from beautiful Chicago. Allison Stewart, you're in the Big Apple still.
I'm in New York and I miss you terribly, Luke.
I got to tell you, Allie, I don't know if it's too late for us to get the show moved to Chicago. If there's a chance, it is like 80 degrees, no humidity. It's about as beautiful as it gets in the city over here.
But when you hear about the history of Bryant Park, which this cast is named after, I think you'll want to come back on home. We have that coming up in this edition very shortly. We also are going to take a look at some of the headlines from the week. We're rolling up on the weekend right now.
A big weekend for me. I'm in Chicago. I'm going to be a panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
That's excellent.
I'm very excited. They're very fun over here at the Wait, Wait head offices. And on the show this weekend, Michael Moore. Michael Moore is going to be the guest, and he's going to actually be on stage with us in Chicago. But more to the point of this cast, we have some ripping and reading to do, I think, don't we?
Of the headlines from the week. All right, from Thursday, the big headline was President Bush's veto of a bill that would let taxpayer dollars go towards new lines of embryonic stem cells. You know what, Luke? It's become like a doing the dozens between the political candidates. Some snaps. Hillary said about the veto, this is just one example of how the president puts ideology before science. President Bush snaps back. If this legislation became law, it would compel American taxpayers to support the deliberate destruction of human embryos. Obama gets in the fight. He says the president is deferring the hopes of millions of Americans who do not have the time to keep wanting for the cure that may save or extend their lives. Bush is not on the ropes. He comes back saying destroying human life in the hopes of saving human life is not ethical. Take that.
I like that Hillary had her response out before the president had even vetoed it. Like, this is just like,
well, we know she's organized. She's organized.
Yeah, but by the way, speaking of Hillary, boy, oh boy, the results are in from her online contest to pick her campaign song, and the winner out of 200,000 plus votes, it's kind of, I would say,
it's this is what it is. And I'm taking off my journalist hat right now. It's just wrong.
Yeah, I'm going to take off my journalist headphones if I have to hear this song for another second. It's You and I by Celine Dion. And the thing, Allison, that's so weird is that this was a write-in to this contest. They had like maybe 8 songs posted that you could pick from, but then you could write in one. And so somehow 40,000 people wrote in this specific Celine Dion song, and I think there's something fishy about that. Either they're Celine Dion fanatics or the Republican dirty tricks. Maybe they just wanted to make fun of Hillary by making her have the lamest song of all time for her campaign.
It is a smelly situation, if you ask me. Anyway, you cut it. So that was Wednesday's big headline. On Tuesday, we talked to a journalist from the Chicago Sun-Times. He was telling us about that huge mob trial. They were seating the jury on Tuesday. They actually found 18 people who want to hear this case. It's considered the biggest Chicago mob trial in years. At the center of it, the feds have 18 previously unsolved mob hits from the past 18 years. The prosecutor opened by saying, this is not The Sopranos, this is not The Godfather, these are real people, very corrupt and without honor.
Well, I'm in Chicago, so I'm going to keep a close eye on Joey the Clown and his associates, Allison, the next couple of days. From Dear Abby, this is her debut, but probably not the last time we'll hear about her on the Rip and Read. There was a letter that's been getting emailed all over the place. A woman wrote into Dear Abby about some engaged friends of hers who admitted over dinner that they've registered for expensive items just so they could return them and then get the cash. And this woman who wrote the letter to Dear Abby was so, so angry about this that she wanted to skip the wedding. And Dear Abby said, it's okay to do so as long as you let them know that you're not coming so that someone else can get that, salmon filet or whatever it is they set aside for each reception guest.
It's so wrong, but I have to admit, so tempting. You know, I got married recently and I still am getting wedding gifts, and a very generous over-the-top person in our lives gave us about a $350, I'm gonna change the name of the gift to protect the innocent, let's say an espresso maker. And my husband would let me return it because he said, this guy really is trying to give us something. We never use it. It's in a box. I see a box. I see 350 clams I could be spending at Crate and Barrel every time I look at it.
You know what you need to do is just take it on down the way. What Bill doesn't know won't hurt him. Buy him some scotch. Spend $40 of it on a nice bottle of Dalwhinnie or something, and I think he'll be okay with it.
And then I'll spirit it away. Okay, that's the Rip and Read for this week ending in June, this third week of June. You know
I like
what, though?
That, I like that music. That was some nice.
It was very
it was
nice.
Very, it made me feel kind of tough, kind of like I was I was ripping and reading and sort of, you know, bebopping through the week's news. That was cool.
It's going to be the first weekend of summer this weekend. One of my favorite things to do in summer, we were talking about it earlier, going to see concerts outside. And some of these, you know, big festivals have become almost vacation destinations. I mean, if you're going to spend airfare and hotel and take time off of work to go see the Grand Canyon, why not go see a whole bunch of your favorite bands in one place? Some people, you know, they actually camp at some of these concerts. It's like a camping trip with entertainment. Of course, Bonnaroo is the big one when you think about that. That four-day event wrapped up just a couple of days ago. And Andy Langer went. He's recovered enough to join us. Andy is a music columnist for Esquire magazine and the host of The Next Big Thing, which airs in Austin on KROX. Okay, Andy, these days, is if you're thinking about a destination festival, you're thinking about going to one of these, give me one big pro for the destination festival and one big con.
The big pro is you've got a dozen or more bands that you could see at one shot, you know, over a course of a couple days that you would have paid $20 to $30 to see anywhere else and to see them individually. You get to see them all in one place. And, you know, in that case, it's a bargain. And you're getting to just knock a bunch of things or check a bunch of things off your list that you wouldn't have ordinarily been able to see. You know, and if you're talking about hiring babysitters or you're talking about, you know, making plans to go out on a Tuesday night or whatever, when those bands come to your town, to knock them all out in one weekend is a big thing. The con is heat. I mean, it's summer. And you got to go out there and sweat and just constantly be drinking water and schlep to and from the venue, worry about parking. You're going someplace that 80,000 other people are. And a lot of people just don't have it in them to deal with that kind of situation and would rather go see one band when they come to your town.
I was at Coachella a couple of years ago, which is this big one that happens in California, and it was like 110 degrees and there was like 70, 80,000 people. And it was so miserable that I said I would never go back, and I haven't. So, I mean, I totally can attest to what Andy's talking about.
So, Andy, what's in it for the band, especially the larger acts like The Roots or Pearl Jam, both of whom are going to be at Lollapalooza in Chicago in August? I mean, they could make a lot of money on their own, right?
Yeah, and they get paid very well to do these gigs because, like you said, they're going to be put in front of a lot of people who would have ordinarily seen them somewhere else. They get paid really well. I mean, for a headliner, it's a money gig, and, you know, there's some prestige in it. I mean, if you're Pearl Jam, you're playing your one show of 2007, you want it to be something that's going to get a lot of press throughout the year, and something like Lollapalooza provides that. You are the Lollapalooza headliner for 2007, and that itself has some cachet to it. If you're a smaller band, I mean, you know, for instance, at Bonnaroo, you know, we were standing there in front of Mavis Staples, the legendary Mavis Staples, who, you know, would probably play for, you know, 300 or 400 people wherever it is she goes, but she was standing there playing at Bonnaroo in front of, you know, one guy from Rolling Stone, another guy from the New York Times, somebody else from GQ. There was a USA Today reporter there. She hit all of those people in one 40-minute shot that it would have taken her, you know, 6 months of touring to get in front of those same people. And, you know, the crowd itself at Bonnaroo is going to go back to wherever they're from and say, you're not going to believe how good Mavis Staples is.
Two interesting, you know, things you mentioned there real quick is, one, 40-minute sets. If you go to one of these festivals, you're not getting a full-on concert. Everybody should just really know that. I mean, I think it sounds obvious, but I don't think a lot of people really understand that you may see four songs from Beck and that's it.
I didn't understand that, Allison. When I went to Coachella, I went to see the Flaming Lips, my favorite band in the world maybe, and they spent 20 minutes inflating a bubble that Wayne Coyne was trying to get into, and it was the first time he'd done it, so they didn't have it down. And then they spent like 10 minutes tuning their instruments, and they played two songs, and then it was like, you know, over. And I was standing there in a pool of my own sweat and tears, so mad about this.
Well, I mean, to be fair, some of the festivals, like Bonnaroo, you know, the Flaming Lips played a three-hour set at Bonnaroo.
What?
They had to keep adding songs because the requirement of a three-hour set at Bonnaroo, they played at midnight to 3 a.m.
Luke!
They played more songs than they've ever played. And
they played Happy Birthday in four languages.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to fill it out.
They also did this amazing thing where they handed out 15,000 laser pointers to the crowd. And then at one point, Wayne Coyne asks the crowd to spray the laser pointers towards him onto a mirror that he's holding. And it projects 15,000 beams of light back into the crowd.
Wow, that sounds
really
amazing.
Which was pretty cool.
That sounds dangerous.
Well, you know, you take some risk going to the middle of nowhere, Tennessee, to see music anyway, don't you?
Talk to me about the Sam Roberts Band. That was one of the groups that you were really impressed with.
Yeah, I mean, it was a Thursday night show. Sam Roberts has done really well on the American festival circuit. He's played, you know, Austin City Limits a couple times, that festival. He's played Lollapalooza last year. He can't get arrested, though, generally in America. But in Toronto, and throughout Canada, he's a superstar. And he's basically the Canadian Springsteen. He looks and plays like a young Springsteen. You see that footage of Springsteen in the, you know, mid to late 70s, and that's what you get with Sam Roberts, a really energetic, really amazing frontman who, when you put him in front of a large crowd at something like a festival, just delivers.
Well, let's take a listen to what Canada loves so much.
Another day breaks and the last one's gone. You dig deep, just to carry on. Your debt's paid off, but it don't feel gone. So you slip out the back and you're moving on. Yeah. I can never figure out how to make a case that it don't amount to a fall.
So aside from Sam Roberts, the other band you point us toward is The Hold Steady, who I'm looking at their website. They're hitting every festival on this side of the pond as well as Europe. Tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, The Hold Steady have been one of those, you know, blog bands that people went nuts on. People that had their MP3 blogs were really behind The Hold Steady early on. You know, they've gotten a lot of great press and play, you know, good-sized places the rest of the year. But at a festival, you know, there's some question as to whether The Hold Steady's really literate approach. I mean, you know, these are literary songs delivered in sort of a, you know, you got to really, it's another case of Springsteen envy. You got to really like Springsteen to like The Hold Steady. But
I thought the Arcade Fire was the only band allowed to completely sound like Springsteen this summer. It just seems like a long list of people that are completely, totally ripping off the Boss's sound.
Yeah, they're you know, maybe he's more influential than we thought. But in any event, The Hold Steady at Bonnaroo, you know, was something of a, you know, I think a watershed moment for the festival, because at Bonnaroo has the reputation as being a bunch of dirty hippies seeing dirty hippie bands. And
like there's something wrong with that? Just want to say that.
I think there's a lot wrong with that.
Oh, well, that's another discussion, Andy. Let's keep going with The Hold Steady.
I mean, you got to smell Bonnaroo. But in any event, The Hold Steady, I mean, they had this enormous crowd in front of them, which got to be 10 or 15,000 people who knew every word, who sang along with every word, who, if they didn't know every word, started learning them on the spot. And they were a genuine success story out of this Bonnaroo. And I think it meant something both to The Hold Steady and to the festival.
Let's listen.
Oh, she said I won't be much for conversation if we go into the rest of this. And I never been much for the conservation. I kind of dig these awkward silences. She's got those Bone Brigade videos. She knew it back and forth. She slept with so many skaters. She had the place to herself. She had a couple hundred bucks.
Okay, that's The Hold Steady, the breakout band. One of them, according to Andy Langer, music columnist for Esquire. That's who we're talking to about festival, destination festivals this summer. And there's a whole bunch of other ones. It's interesting that you said that the band like that was appearing at Bonnaroo, which kind of has a jam band history or reputation. What other genres of festivals are available to people this summer? It can't all be tie-dye and patchouli.
No, I mean, there's one in Oklahoma called Rocklahoma that's Poison, Rat, Vince Neil, Warrant, Slaughter, L.A. Guns.
Nice!
All of the 80s bands. There's Stagecoach was this year, the first year of Stagecoach. It was the weekend after Coachella, and it was a country festival modeled after Coachella on the same fairgrounds as Coachella, and it was nothing but, you know, mainstream country on the main stage, and then folks like, you know, Willie Nelson, Lucinda Williams, and whatnot on the second stage. There's talk of Bonnaroo doing a country festival next year. The folks that put on Austin City Limits and Lollapalooza are doing a country festival of their own near College Station, Texas. They're going to do that in October, and that'll have Tim McGraw and Willie Nelson and a bunch of other folks. So, there, you know, you name your genre, because there's jazz, you know, there's all kinds of jazz festivals this summer. There are still festivals that cater to the hippie crowd that'll, you know, put Widespread or put, you know, any of those bands at the top of a bill and draw enormous crowds of people who want to camp out and spend the weekend.
We'll put a couple of links on our website, actually, too. There's a World Music Festival. There's also a Gathering of the Vibes. We'll put some links to some of those ones you mentioned, Andy, too.
Yeah.
And, Andy, you know, we're just, like, out of time here, but I'm going to be in Chicago at when Lollapalooza's here. Can you just give me – so I'm not just wandering around melting in the heat for no reason. Can you just tell me, like, a couple of people I want to make sure – a couple of tents I try to hit there?
During Lollapalooza, I mean, there's some good early stuff like Elvis Perkins. The Polyphonic Spree are a great festival band, just because there's so much going on stage. Rocky Erickson has, you know, he's the classic Texas burnout who created psychedelic rock. I mean, he brought it to San Francisco. He's been in and out of mental institutions. There's a great movie about him. He's making the festival rounds this year, and it's the first time he's played outside of Texas in about 30 years. And so Rocky Erickson will be playing Lollapalooza. And then on, I don't know if we had to pick one for Sunday, let's go for Los Campesinos, who sound like they might be from south of the border, but are actually from the UK. And they're sort of like a new Arctic Monkeys. And they may be worth seeing on Sunday. It's their American debut.
Los Campesinos. All right, Andy Langer, music columnist for Esquire magazine, also the host of The Next Big Thing, which you can hear in Austin on KROX. Thanks, Andy.
All right. Thank you, folks.
So, Luke, one of the great things about working right across from Bryant Park in New York City is we just have music.
The models?
And the music that we have right on our doorstep. Always music going on out there. Movies. But it wasn't always like this. Bryant Park has quite an interesting history. And our video producer, Wynn Rosenfeld, who I see wandering through. Come in, Wynn. Sit. Welcome.
How much does
Wynn,
by the way, look like Ira Glass? Did somebody tell him that if you work at NPR, you have to totally Ira Glass out?
I think it's the glasses, actually.
Maybe.
I think Wynn's got his own look going on. Hi, Wynn.
How's it going?
It's going okay. So Wynn, you have been doing research. You've been our staff historian as well as video producer here at the Bryant Park Project, putting together a video, several videos about the park. That's a big project. How did you start?
Well, it's just right downstairs.
I went outside.
It's like so easy
I got some miso soup, walked across the street.
It's just like a really beautiful, beautiful place. But I grew up in Manhattan, lived here my whole life, and it's very, very much the opposite of the park that I grew up with.
Like, what did your dad say? It's a good place to get shot or something?
Yeah. It's a good place to get shot.
is that Dad Rosenfeld?
Yeah, it's more like that. But, you know, and I was like, yeah, that was like the first time I really understood irony, I think. I was like 6 years old, and my dad told me it was a good place to get shot.
When I moved to New York in 1988, they used to call it Needle Park.
Yeah.
It was a place to score drugs. It wasn't any place you wanted to walk alone in the middle of the night, even in the middle of the day. And now you see it littered with models, which Luke likes, but also guys in their Dockers and people with their laptops. It's really
so cosmopolitan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And as opposed to, I mean, you know, it's like it used to really have a reputation of just drug dealers would just go to work there. Drug dealers and prostitutes would, like, get off the train.
They would bring a lunchbox.
Yeah, I mean, you know, put their hard hats on and do their sling their yay. So that disreputable history of Bryant Park, like, goes way back. it's pretty much been like the hard luck case of urban parks. It's one of the oldest parks in New York City, and definitely it's had one of the most spotty pasts.
So to actually see Wynn's report, you need to check in on our website, npr.org/Bryant Park. And as you've been working on this project, because there's going to be a part two and a part three, so we learn more about our new front yard, two things that surprised you.
Well, I'd say the main thing that surprised me, just right off the bat, was that they managed to fix a really crime-infested place, not by loading it up with cops and fences and rules and laws, but in fact, by giving people a reason to feel invested in the park. And I'm really interested in that from the perspective of just Enlightenment philosophy and the mm-hmm. idea that, like, you can use social contract theory to make drug dealers stop screwing up your park. So the people that are in charge of it now have made a real effort to give things like free internet and an outdoor unguarded library. There's 2,000 chairs down there. None of them are ever chained up. None of them have ever been stolen. There's all 5 or 7 Harry Potter books are sitting there. I mean, they've been there for weeks and weeks and weeks, and no one's stolen them, and that's pretty surprising.
So who is the guy, Wynn, who came up with this whole idea to sort of just basically try to rehab the park through just treating people, I guess, like they're going to be grown-ups and they're going to treat the park right?
Well, the guy's name is Dan Biederman, and he's actually his father was a lot like my father. I mean, his dad actually
he talked
worked.
Like this.
Yeah, I'm going to guess yes on that. But his father also worked actually in one of the buildings on our street here. And Dan, as a young boy, said, "I'm going to go down there and play in the park." And his dad forbid him to do the same thing. And so he, you know, basically spent a lot of his life, you know, trying to think about ways to fix up that park. And he was able to finally secure the position where he could do that. And he turned it around, and there's very little controversy about the fact that he was extremely instrumental in doing a tremendously difficult task.
Before we let you go, my favorite story that you've come back and told us is there's somebody down in the park who used to have an NPR show?
Oh, yeah.
Is this going to happen to us?
That's Terry. That's yeah, sign. He plays Ragtime.
What kind of show did he used to have?
It was called This Is Ragtime. This Is Ragtime with Terry. And he, he would talk. And I learned a lot about Ragtime from him, too.
Well, now that we have you intrigued about Bryant Park, or I use the liberally, because it's actually Wynn's report that you should watch on our website. Wynn Rosenfeld, thank you so much.
Thanks, Allison. Bye, guys.
Bye, Wynn.
So, Luke, that's it for this edition of the Bryant Park Project.
Yes, it is, Allie. Yes, bye from Chicago.
Bye. Good luck on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Everybody else, thanks for listening.